fun storming the castle.
Next, we go to the precinct. Here's another great scene where Ryan has checked out the alibis and says that, yeah, they were signed in, but I can't really get any corroboration on it. And this is where Espo comes in with the financials. And he finds, you know, the deposits and withdrawals. And they start to discuss that. And then off in the distance, and I don't know how many people caught this, but he says, ah, my face. In the break room. When the espresso machine has broken and is spewing steam into the room. And poor Rick has the cup broken in his hand.
And worried about his face, yeah.
I love it when he says things like that. Like, he's overly concerned with his vanity. But I'm not, it's not really 100% clear, but I heard it as clear as day with my headset on that he says, my face!
I'm gonna have to watch that again and listen to it again, because I missed that.
Yeah, it's murky. I would suggest listening to it with headphones, like on your computer or something.
I wonder if it'll come in through the Spanish one.
Ooh, it might. I don't know.
Mi cara! I need to watch that now.
You should. I might have to do that too, because I didn't pick it up on that one. They question him, of course, and they bring up the curse. But this time, they can't stop from revealing the fact that they set everything up. I love how haughty he gets back with them, that he's like, oh, very funny, very cute. You know, when it was, if it was him on the other side, he wouldn't want them to have that reaction towards him. But, he, you know, it's like he's never done anything like this in his life. Mm-hmm. It's just hilarious. And I love the parting shot where he says, I'm not cleaning this up. I better clean this up.
I better clean this up.
Yes, it's cute. Yeah.
I don't know. I was gonna make a coffee and the cappuccino machine started shaking. And just as I hit the deck, it exploded.
You could have been killed.
I know! Okay. Very funny. Yes, you got me.
No, I'm Castle. I don't believe in curses.
What, did you get bomb disposal to rig something up?
Yeah, it was all flash and no damage.
And the chair?
I just pulled a couple of screws and let gravity do the rest. Night, Castle.
I'm not cleaning this up. Better clean this up.
That scene, for me, what really sold it there at the very beginning was Ryan is coming in and saying, you could have been killed! And Castle said, I know! And just the tone of both of their voices, like, Ryan is so worried about his friend here.
Right.
Because, you know, we all know that Ryan's got this little man crush on Castle.
Oh, yes.
Even at this point, and how terrifying it would have been to see his idol get killed in the line of duty by an espresso maker.
Right.
But, yeah.
By the very espresso maker that he introduced to them.
How ironic. So it's just that whole thing, and then that high five. Oh man, I love the high five between Kate and the guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I love how she's just like, oh, just, you know, took out a couple of screws, and she just high fives and was like, that's Magnus there. It's just awesome.
And they're trying not to break.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. It's almost like, should we let him know or should we plan something else? And they're turning their faces away,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep it together, and they're just like, oh no, we're just going to have to let him know.
That's yeah. it. But they do it pretty well, yeah, like you said, Ryan, at that moment, like, you could have been killed.
Yeah. Very concerned. It's cute, and I love how the steam is just billowing into the room, and Espo just walks over and turns it off.
Yeah.
You know, like, Castle could have done it, but, you know, he's too worried about his face. So that's great. Like I said, everyone's going to have to go back and listen to that scene because it does add a little tiny bit more to it when you hear him yell that off in the distance. It makes me wonder what Kate has to be thinking at that moment. Did he just say my face?
Well, and you wonder how much of that is Nathan as well.
Right.
Why wow, can you beautiful, that so much anyway?
Face.
Yeah. I do not want my last thought to be, it's eating my face, my beautiful, beautiful face.
Right.
So he has all these lines about that, about his face, that he talks about in yes. interviews and that kind of stuff. So there are times when I wonder how much is Mr. Fillion.
Right. And I think that might have been an ad lib, especially since it wasn't
on
it
camera.
Wasn't enunciated, right.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely like just, it sounded like something he just did.
Yeah.
In the moment. And they said, oh, that's great. We'll leave it in.
Right, yeah.
But it really, I almost peed myself a little laughing at it because I was like, I never heard that before. So I urge you all, please go back and listen to it with headphones on. Anything else about that scene with you guys?
I do like that line that you mentioned that I'm not cleaning this up. I better clean this up.
Right.
Just because you get that sense. I mean, we have that sense with Castle that he can be very irresponsible. But we also get the sense here that he does do what needs to be done. And, you know, he's used to cleaning up messes. You know, he's got a daughter, and I'm sure he took care of her when she was sick. And that kind of thing. And so it's just a little different side of Castle that I like seeing from time to time.
Yep. I do like how he starts that sentence with his indignance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it kind of gets sheepish about, oh, well, I guess I'll clean it up.
Yeah.
It's just cute.
I agree with Joy there. I thought that as well. There's like an underlying sense of responsibility there that it's like, he says at first indignant of like, I'm not going to clean this up, but yeah, I got to clean it up because someone has to do it. And there's an underlying idea there of how he's more well-rounded and not just careless.
Right. You know, you would think that someone like him could just brush it off and walk away, but he can't do that. It's a mess. And I'm responsible for it. So, you know, I got to take care of it before I leave.
Yeah. And well, we've seen also how he values the work that gets done at the precinct. You know, and the people that do that work, you know, he knows that if he didn't clean it up, somebody else would, and somebody else would have to take time out to do that when they could be spending said time on something else, something more important maybe.
Right.
And so I think that's part of it as well, that it's a little bit of his respect for the folks that have taken him in and allowed him to shadow them.
And importance for their jobs as well.
Right. Yeah.
That he has respect, that he's not one of those people there that has a really important job.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can waste his time. And that is a mess, by the way, because I have one of those espresso machines. I don't use it anymore because I have a Keurig now. But when that little thing, I have had that little, it's like a little scooper for the espresso grounds. When it comes off, and it has come off for me as well, the steam has been enough to push it. It is a mess. It goes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on the counter, but it's also in, I'm sure it's down in the coffee machine, and it's just gross and ew. I wouldn't be able to leave it either. I'd have to mess about and clean it up. But then I'm OCD. I don't think he is.
Not so much, I don't think.
I'm about 1,000% sure that Castle is not OCD. So he goes back, he retreats to his loft, wounded, and he shares his lament with Alexis before we see the scene. And she says they were mean. And of course, Castle tries to play it off. Oh, I knew the whole time.
I knew the whole time. It's hilarious. I love that whole scene so much.
And when he's, what is he eating? Some sort of blueberry or something like that. It's just funny. He's shoveling this food in his mouth and he's so blasé. Oh, I knew about it, you know.
And they don't believe him. Yeah. They don't believe him at all.
No.
Buy
it for a second. She starts to talk about that Scottish play. and Alexis immediately says Macbeth and she goes
which makes shoulder, yeah.
And she recalls a story about when she incurred the wrath of this curse back in the day, she had to figure out what to do to break it, and that maybe, you know, he shouldn't be messing with this sort of a thing, that it might be more serious than she thinks. And that, I love the interaction between the Castle family. In this case, it's just great to see Martha berating him and then recalling a personal detail from her life.
And then there's the end part there where she says, well, your father, it's a good thing your father doesn't believe in curses, because he's walking into a building full of guns or something
right.
like that.
Yes.
And he calls back, I heard that.
Yep.
So I like that little bit
he's
too.
He's walking out the door, I think, at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. She's so sardonic when she says it too. It's a good thing he doesn't believe in curses. I mean, she is saying it like, I know he believes in curses, but I'm teasing him. And I'm also kind of, poking at him like they were doing back at the precinct, putting this thought in his mind that he's going into this dangerous place. And, it's just cute that she's gotten in on this whole thing. And I love the spitting.
Yeah.
So Martha.
The whole drama and flair of the whole thing, that just her recounting that experience with, and this is what I had to do, and I just love her. I think she's hilarious. So.
I do, and she's great in this episode. She doesn't have a lot, but what she does,
she makes it work. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And Alexis, as far as that goes, she doesn't have a lot of scenes, but when she's on, they have such impact. I think, not just in this episode, wherever they are. It's hard to ignore
definitely.
Them. So he goes back to the precinct, and Rice Bozzito has found out more about the financials, and they let Kate know, and they show him the pictures that they've gotten from the bank manager that show Norton Grimes, and they talk about his connection with drug trafficking, which is our red herring for the episode, as there is usually one in a Castle episode. And they leave the precinct while Castle is walking in. And
we gotta stop. Hold on, though.
Okay.
Because there's a couple things in this scene.
Okay.
There's the, whenever you guys are done being cute line.
Yes.
So that's, I love that line.
Me too. Again, it's the team bonding thing.
Your bromance right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a classic Rice Bozzito moment.
Yeah.
And Kate teasing them about it. I think she sees them like her little brothers a good part of the time. And then something not necessarily specific to this scene, but just that I noticed during the scene, is that Castle and Beckett match. They're very matchy-matchy in this one, with the blue shirts and the brown jackets.
Yep.
I would have to say that. It wasn't in the beginning, but about midway through, they match. Yep, they've got matching shirts and matching coats,
Yeah, and they both have those jackets are kind of... Indiana Jones-ish jackets too, which I like. So.
Yeah. Now you notice their clothes starts to match after they come clean about the pranks.
Mm-hmm.
So after they've bonded, they're not rubbing together like sandpaper anymore. They're a team again. So they start to put their... I think that's a very deliberate choice.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. Yeah, could be.
And there's also a moment, I forgot when that was, but there was somewhere in the middle, there's another one where they're saying this thing at the same time as well. It's right around that same time frame, so there's that connection that they have with each other, where they're just parts of a whole,
Yes. And I really do think that this was the season that they were reinforcing this whole they're partners in everything relationship. Even though they weren't headed headlong for the will they won't they kind of thing. They were playing with it, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Well, that gave us a very, very good and sweet and true development, I think, is what they made, what the writers made sure that we would get from these two characters, because we saw them grow and realize things, but just, grow together and have this connection with each other where they balance each other out. And we got to see it all because they gave us all the sweet beginning steps of a relationship.
I'm going to sound really old-fashioned here, but this is very much like an old-fashioned courtship that they showed us.
Yeah.
He definitely wanted to lay the groundwork. Once he realized he wanted a relationship with her, he made sure to put down a very strong foundation. He was there for her no matter what. And until that broke at the end of season 4, it was true. He was there for her whenever she needed him.
Mm-hmm.
you know, not just, you know, partner and friend, but, you know, whatever she needed. And yeah. I think they really, really built that up nicely.
Yeah. And it was a very important character development for him, I think, and for us to see as the audience, because he was played, or at least portrayed, as this playboy type. Here's this guy who has two divorces, who can't take anything seriously, you know, so this kind of started out. And then they let us look behind this facade to see the real guy and see what's in there, and how she brings it out and how he wants to be better for her.
Yep.
And it's a gradual development, of which we're also seeing in season two, to bring it back. It's this gradual development from teasing, or kind of nagging each other, to teasing playfulness, to this, yeah, this really sweet courtship type relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he thought that he was a playboy more than he actually was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they were really good. I think the show is very much underestimated by people, but I think the writing in his case for Castle, his development was very subtle and really mm-hmm. smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They developed him just at just the right speed. And it almost snuck up on us how mature he got.
Mm-hmm.
So I like how they did it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're passing Castle as they're leaving the precinct. And Kate says, "Are you coming?" You know, like normal. And I love this about Castle. He knows she's not going to give in, but he asks her if he can drive anyway. And she, just to punch things home a little bit more, she says, "No, you're cursed." And again, it makes me laugh because she, you know, she's teasing him.
Come on, Castle, let's go.
Can I drive?
Are you kidding? You're cursed.
But the fact that he would even ask,
mm-hmm.
come on.
I know, doesn't she always say no? But that's just, yeah. That's just their dynamic.
Right. I doubt even now that they're together, she's never going to let him drive.
Maybe he just thought she'd feel bad after the espresso machine.
Maybe, I guess, but
trying to milk it.
Chances, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't let him drive my car. Honestly, if it was my car, no. he can drive me in his car if he wants, you know, but so they
he let her drive his car, you know.
Exactly. That's fine. Kate's a good driver. So they go to find Grimes, and I couldn't decide whether this was his place of residence or someplace that he worked out of, because it looked very industrial. But so I'll just say his location. And of course, they're wearing the Rider police jackets, which I love. She's still teasing him about the curse as they walk in. And we don't see much on camera. We see the door and we hear the dog growling and Rick trying desperately to calm the dog down. "Oh, come on. Come on, boy." And then they tell him to run and he runs out and the dog is following them. Hilarious, especially since they hadn't planned this one. And the fact that he's running from this dog, he is such a girl. Now, mind you, I would run from the dog, but I am literally a girl, so.
Yeah, that's a big mean dog, though.
Oh yeah.
True, but no one else ran.
Well, they also had guns.
True.
Well, and the dog was on Castle, so they didn't need to run.
Yeah, I guess.
I love the dance that he does on top of that car, trying to get away from.
Yeah. Honestly, if he could jump on the car, so could the dog. But hey, you know, it's like that joke that says, you know, you don't have to be able to outrun a bear. You just have to be able to outrun whoever's with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like they allowed the dog to chase Castle out so that they wouldn't have to deal with it. And then, you know, there's the follow-up to that when they get to the precinct where, you know, they're talking to Lainey on the phone and he spins the theory about the mummy being the killer. But this whole time he's holding his pants shut. Because the dog has ripped a huge hole in his pants. And I just love watching him because he's so uncomfortable and he's trying really hard to act normal. Then the cop walks by and whistles, and this is when he realizes this is not the best place to be with a hole in his pants. So he asks Kate for permission to go home and change, which is cute. And Kate watches him walk away again, you know, trying to get a little peek at the buttocks, maybe. I think so, at least. And then
she is totally checking him
out. Yeah.
I love the scene.
Blatantly.
She's checking him out. He's wearing red and white striped boxers.
I know. I love that.
And there's just all kinds of funny. I love the at the very beginning of the scene.
Out. Yeah.
I love at the beginning of the scene as they walk in. He says with exactly the same inflection as Ryan said earlier. He says, "I could have been killed."
Right.
And exactly like tone of voice, exactly the same.
Yes.
And then the best part is that the way Kate answers, she doesn't just say, "But you weren't," but she says, "But you weren't."
Right.
And she draws it out and she sounds like I don't know, Valley Girl almost.
It's very sing-songy.
Yeah. Like, despite my best efforts.
Right. And isn't this also the scene where she tries to relate to him what the substance was made of, and she kind of goes, "I'm running for my hearing tissue."
Yeah, that's true. And he's like, "What?
What? What? Human tissue."
Yeah, human tissue.
And of course,
like chubby flesh.
Yeah, and she says, "Don't even go there." I mean, it's one of those, you know, come on, I don't need to hear your theory. You're not going to say the mummy came to life. Of course he is. And he says something to the effect of, "I was just kidding," or maybe not. You know, it's one of those.
Okay, fine. The lab identified the substance found on the gargoyle, and it was a combination of sodium nitrate, iron oxide, decomposed hemp fibers, and vegetative tissue.
I'm sorry, what?
Ancient human tissue.
Mummified tissue? Like mummy flesh?
Which means at some point, our killer came into contact with the mummies and somehow transferred the substance onto his or her clothing before killing Medina.
Or maybe the mummy himself has risen from the grave and is roaming New York seeking vengeance. I'm kidding. Sort of.
He wants to reassure her that he's not really thinking it's the mummy, but he really is. So that's a great scene.
Yeah, I really like how it's just that entire time when you watch him, he just keeps lifting up that flap on his pants.
I know. Just watching him.
Sometimes you see his hands because the camera is not on it, of course, but you sometimes see peaks of flesh and just his hand just kind of chugging up that corner.
And the ridiculous red boxers that he has on.
It's hilarious. But, and I love how he just asks if he can go home and change and just walks away, and she's totally checking him out. I love that.
He does that really timid sort. Do you think you can handle this?
As if she could, you know.
Yeah, and if it were me, I'd say no. You gotta stay.
You can't leave now.
But if you keep your eyes on him during the scene, Nathan is a genius when it comes to playing this physical comedy, and.
Yes.
He, you know, he's very furtively looking around to make sure no one can see him. And he's not doing a very good job, obviously, because people are seeing him. But just the way he plays it, it's perfect. He's such a good actor.
And I like also not just his comedic timing there, but hers also, because she pretends to ignore it the entire time.
Yep.
And when he walks away, she checks it out. But she just, like, she's not, you know, he fidgets, and she's all matter of fact about it. Let him deal with his problem.
Yep. Yeah, you
and then
go.
Takes her opportunity when she gets it, you know.
So. Yep. I gotta take a look at that booty.
Yeah, hello.
I would.
He's got some booty going on,
oh,
absolutely.
Seriously. And, you know, if you've seen Firefly, I think you know what's happening.
I have not seen
there.
The whole show, but I believe I've seen the picture of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah. It's a nice picture.
That's was floating around Tumblr the other day, too.
It floats around here and there. So this is where Monty comes out and talks to Rice Bozzito. And they do a little bit of a give and take talking about the curse. And Montgomery gives the lecture saying, you know, this is nothing to mess around with.
because there's no upside in screwing with things you can't explain?
And don't you ever forget it.
Even if you don't believe it, don't take anything for granted. And mm-hmm. and I like how they repeat the line back to him.
Yes, Dad, we hear you.
Right.
Yeah, they repeat it back in unison. And there's that little bit about how when he's telling a story and Esposito says, and you think, you know, it was the hexes? He says, no, man ate bacon with every meal.
Right.
But.
Yeah, but you don't mess around with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, they very much, it's very much like a okay, Dad kind of moment with them. It's very cute. So next we go to the interrogation room where they're questioning Grimes now that they've brought him in. And he denies that he's in the drug game. And he says that he's involved in antiquities. And he tells Kate that Will was selling him a mummy. And, of course, Kate's not buying it, that the mummy was a minor part of the exhibit's contents. I believe he says some sort of slave girl.
Slave girl mm-hmm. number six.
Right. When he realizes that, or when he gets the news that the mummy isn't what his client wanted, this is when he takes back the money. And this is where, apparently in the financials, they found out when the money was deposited and returned and blah, blah, blah. So this story kind of backs up the evidence that they have, but they still believe that there's a drug element to it. And again, we're in that red herring. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about you guys, I never thought it had anything to do with drugs.
Yeah, that, yeah, no.
It very much looked like the red herring. In the
it
episode.
Didn't, yeah, it didn't really fit. It was almost too obviously a red herring. It just didn't really fit. I mean, I didn't really.
Yeah, drugs yeah. don't make for a good story.
No. But the whole I'm selling a mummy thing definitely did.
Exactly.
So the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, good. He's selling a mummy. Let's find out more about that. So.
Yeah, sense because, you know, people collect everything. It's, you know, art collection and everything that, you know, there's a big black market out there where people steal or acquire things and sell it to the highest bidder.
How does one get into collecting mummies, though?
Grave robbing?
Excellent point.
That could be part of it. And there was a lot of that even today going on. And I'm sure those are being sold as, you know, something rare that no one else could get their hands on. Really, rich people love to show off how rich they are. I'm assuming buying a mummy would be one of the ultimate see
buy
what
a
I could buy.
Car, man. Buy like a Tesla.
But anyone could buy a car.
Not certain cars.
No, but I'm saying it's a car. You know, it's for sale.
Yeah, but
mummies aren't
dead bodies.
Normally for sale. Some people are into that sort of thing. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying it happens. And of course, there's that whole, you know, Michael Jackson wanted to buy the Elephant Man's bones or whatever. I mean, there's precedents for it. So
weird.
Yeah, that's very weird. Like, but, you know, she doesn't believe it yet. And that's where we end in that scene. We go to Castle's loft, where he is looking over his will. And that kind of made me laugh when I first saw it. But as he speaks to his mother, it became slightly more serious, that it's almost like he's realizing the kind of danger he can get in following Kate. And he asks Martha, you know, make sure you look after Alexis better than you looked after me, which is, you know, a little funny and a little not so funny. And she agrees and says, well, you know, you might be taking this a little too seriously. And he says that he'd rather be safe than sorry. And she says, well, you know what you have to do. Get someone to reverse the curse.
Well, then I think maybe we should try to figure out a way to reverse the curse. You know, the mummy equivalent of my running around the theater. Someone at the museum must know that.
You've become very wise in your old age.
Watch it, Buster.
So, you know, this is kind of one of those, are we having a serious conversation? Are we joking around? And it's kind of half and half for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of jabs at her a bit. I mean, obviously with the better care than you took of me line. But he also says, when she tells him, you know, go find somebody who will help you reverse the curse, he says, you've become very wise in your old age.
Yeah.
And she just gives him, she has this expression on her face as Castle walks out, like, I'm going to kill you.
I believe there's a parting shot.
About that, yeah.
Yeah, I believe she says something like "watch it" or something like that as
yeah,
they walk
she
out.
Does. Yeah.
Yes, she does.
So there's that teasing, but you can definitely see that he didn't have the most idyllic of youths growing up. That he feels like perhaps he had to take care of her more often than he should have.
Yeah. Well, there's an or just was left to his own devices maybe, or but we don't really know, and I think it's just interesting the way they address it, if they do, because we never really know in detail what has gone on and maybe how much his young mind exaggerated too. Because right. I think we all have memories where it's like, oh my God, and you know, it was not as bad as we recall it, because you know, we don't actually know, that we just see them making small references that we don't have enough details.
Right. Pointed references at it.
Yeah.
The only thing that would make me believe that they're not terribly exaggerated is the fact that she doesn't hesitate to admit to it. You know, she might brush it off a little bit, but she doesn't really argue too much.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm.
And at the same time, she has a point, because he did turn out well, and I think that's important to recognize as well. So we don't really know what really the issue ever was.
Right.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there's the line in I think it's in Lucky Stiff. It's there, I don't remember, maybe it's earlier in season 3, where she says, basically, for all the mistakes that I've made, I did raise a good man.
She definitely admits to her mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows she wasn't the perfect parent, but she's very proud of what he's become.
Well, and I think we see her now, and there's a lot of wisdom in her, and whatever she says, and how she helps him or supports him. And so I always think that doesn't come from nothing.
Right.
You know, even if she had to grow up some and kind of develop, she'd still had that kind of person in her, I think.
I do think that she always was trying her hardest to raise him correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she just didn't have the resources to do so all the time and be the person she wanted to be.
I'm sure. I mean, if we take into account that she was an actress, they have very unusual working hours, and she was a single mother with him for a lot of the times, as far as we know, in a time when that was not, you know, when that was frowned upon, I'm sure, you know, none of this would have made her life any easier.
Right.
Now you have irregular income, you have irregular hours, you know, where to get childcare, what do you do, what, you know, I'm sure she had to improvise a lot and just try her best to make it from day to day, you know.
Yeah,
just kinda...
And I'm betting she didn't have a lot of reference points.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not many people she knew were in the same position as she was.
We don't know anything about her parents or have ever heard anything.
Right.
About...
That's true, yeah.
So, you know, it can't have been easy for her. But I do think she's incredibly proud of him and proud of the father he is as well. That's always nice to see. And in this scene, we do see a little bit of that, but we see him also a little hurt. You know, looking over his will and thinking, well, mother's probably going to get Alexis, and I have to make this point. So anyway, there's that. The next scene, they go to the museum. And this is kind of a long scene because it continues after a commercial break. So I'll go over the points and then we can talk about the scene. He talks to the money guy and he asks about the curse reversal. He's there alone at first. The money guy, I'm not going to say curator anymore, whatever he is, the museum director, says he doesn't know of any ways to reverse this particular curse. And this is where the rest of the team walks in and they ask him what he's doing there, and he again tries to play things off and say, oh, I was waiting for you. And the dude, of course, you know, lets the cat out of the bag right away. Are you here to reverse the curse as well? The look on his face is like, damn it. Why did you have to say anything?
Hey.
Castle, what are you doing here?
Oh, nothing. Just waiting for you.
Huh.
Detectives, you here to talk about reversing the curse as well?
No, I'm here to see a man about a mummy.
So, no luck with the curse, huh?
Look on the bright side, Castle. You die, your book sales skyrocket.
Great. What did Beckett mean, see a man about a mummy? Which mummy?
The one Grimes said Medina was trying to sell.
Fill me in. Spare no detail.
Well, in some ancient cultures, instead of burning...
Fast forward a little bit.
This is where Kate shows him the warrant to swab test the mummy. And they open the sarcophagus and dun, 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 the mummy's missing. So they bring in CSU and they show little establishing shots of them opening crates and doing things to the sarcophagus and all that. And of course they don't find any drug residue. Surprise, surprise. They suppose that Grimes might be telling the truth, but the personnel swear that they saw the mummy in question. So there's a discrepancy here where he says the mummy was missing and they say people saw it. And, you know, it's the first hint that something was hinky in mummy land. And Mr. Money Guy says it will be a PR disaster. And they theorize that perhaps he is going to go out and call the press himself in order to get press for the event. And this is where the Scooby-Doo discussion comes in, where she says, I'm not Velma. And Rick says, no, you're not Velma, you're Daphne. Velma is the nerdy chick who Kate thinks she is, but Castle sees her as Daphne, the cute cheerleader-y sort of girl.
You don't think he could have orchestrated this whole thing just to generate interest in the exhibit, do you?
Murdered Medina just to boost ticket sales? No. That would make this Scooby-Doo. And I'm not Velma.
Velma? You kidding? You're Daphne. Hot, smart, and aggressively brainy, but long legs, short skirt.
Stop.
Fine.
Now.
Got it.
And yet...
Smart. What is it? He says something about hot...
Excessively brainy.
Not excessively brainy.
Right. Yeah.
And she gives him this look like, you did not just say that.
Right.
Excuse me.
He's trying to make it a compliment.
Right, yeah.
But it's so not working.
Yeah, and she doesn't see it that way. So.
Right. I think she'd rather be Velma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just doesn't get that. He sees her as Daphne. With better qualities, of course. But, you know, he can't see her in that nerdy kind of glasses-wearing role.
Yeah, she's hot. So it's just like... But, and we do know that he doesn't really mean it that way because we know he really admires her smarts.
Of course. He's bumbling at giving her this compliment. I think that's more of it than anything, is that he's trying to give her a really nice compliment, saying that she's the more attractive of the pair. But he ends up kind of, you know, stumbling over his own words. And, you know, of course she doesn't take it the right way, the way he intended, but it's adorable. And I love how they're thinking that the museum guy is working on these angles to get more people mm-hmm. to the museum. That's cute.
He brings up that Scooby-Doo thing here, and she's just, oh, excuse me, you know, but it comes back later,
yeah.
Until the very end, where she actually
makes the comments, yeah.
Right.
Comment too, so I think that's sweet, where it just becomes this running thread in this case.
Yeah. They're back at the precinct, and Castle is talking to Martha on the phone in the elevator, and the elevator stops, the lights go out, the emergency lights come on, he tries to convince himself there's no curse, and then he goes over these steps like he watches Mythbusters, which really makes me chuckle. Where he tries to remember what to do in a falling elevator, and he's like, what should I do, jump? No, I should lay down. And he falls onto the floor, and as the doors open, Kate's standing there, and she's like, Castle, what are you doing? He's very disconcerted. He comes out into the room. He wants to make sure that she would never do anything like this to him, because he's very gun-shy, and she says, no, I would never do such a thing. And he says he's going to leave to splash water on his face and throw up a little.
Throw up a little.
Yeah, I love that line. And then the little icing on the top of the cake, when he walks away and Kate sticks her toe into the elevator.
In that elevator.
To test it.
And she just watches it very carefully. She eyes it. She's like, what is going on with this thing?
Right.
And it sticks her toe in.
Just cute. And I love seeing him in the elevator. He's especially since he's talking to his mother about
He's talking to his mom.
I know. And then he loses the signal. All the power goes off. I mean, just everything drops.
No reason to panic.
Right. He's completely...
No reason to panic.
Right.
Just, yeah, that monologue and just the progression of it, how he gets off. I don't blame him. I find that very creepy, you know?
Yeah.
This elevator also doesn't have, like, an emergency phone or a call button.
Right.
Which
it's
is
old.
Weird. Yeah. I just thought that was interesting.
Okay. I was just overreacting. It's like you said, the chances of there actually being a curse are virtually non-existent. That was weird. The elevator just stopped. Mother? Okay. No reason to panic. Small reason to panic. Hello? There is no curse. There is no curse. There is no curse.
All right. What do I do if the elevator falls?
Okay, I think I'm supposed to jump in the air.
No. Lay on the ground.
Castle? What are you doing?
That whole thing. Then the light, and then the whole thing went. I thought the elevator was gonna fall. That wasn't you, was it? Because that wasn't funny.
No, I'm not that cruel. It's an old elevator. You know what? Let's get maintenance up here and tell them not to let anyone on here before it's fixed. Are you okay?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm gonna splash some water on my face and then throw up a little bit.
I'd also like to point out that from this scene was born a classic Castle GIF, or GIF, depending on how you say it.
Yeah.
The elevator's doors opening on his body, the one that says dead.
Yes.
So, I reblogged that today on Tumblr just for
good.
This reason.
Excellent. So everyone, go to her Tumblr and look at the picture.
Like, we haven't all seen it 5,000 times.
I love that picture, and especially since he's going over all the different things he's supposed to do. There's nothing you can do to save yourself if an elevator drops. Nothing.
Yeah. No, lay on the ground.
Right.
Jump. No, wait.
Yeah, the Mythbusters did a whole episode on that, and really it's just almost impossible to survive any kind of a... If you jump at exactly the right time, you might sustain slightly less than life-threatening injuries. Otherwise, you're dead.
But that's it.
Right.
That's slightly terrifying.
Yeah. So, I hope everyone has a good time in their elevator later. They go to Kate standing at the murder board, and she's musing, and I don't even remember what she's saying, because right off, a little blurry in the background, is Castle staring creepily at her. Kind of like normal, but a little more intense. And this is where he asks her to watch out for Alexis if something happens to him. And she says, well, nothing's going to happen to you. And he says, no, seriously. You have to let me know. And he comes up with all these excuses. You know, you've got a gun and you'll make sure to take care of her. She sobers up and she says, of course I will. And she smiles at him, and it's a nice little moment. Then, of course, he ruins it, as usual, by asking her to hide the porn.
I think it's, you know, that specific one, or in general, it's just, those are his coping mechanisms.
Right.
You know, when he, I think he's so used to hiding in some ways his true personality for the public, that he, when he lets on to these personal things, he tries to find his balance and just kind of cover it up.
Right.
But I think that moment is like the most important one of the entire episode, I think.
Yes, I agree.
I think it's got so much meaning at this point where they are, that it's just, he hasn't even known her that long, and he trusts, in the grand scheme, you know, he trusts her with his daughter. Nobody else.
Yep.
You know?
He trusts his mother less.
He doesn't ask Alexis' mother.
Right.
You know, or... He is seriously concerned at this point, in some form or fashion, that something's what happened to him, and he goes to her and says, "Will you take care of my child?"
Right. And she's obviously very touched by that sentiment as well.
And you can see the progression, because she's like, but nothing's going to happen. And so he's like, no, I'm serious. And she gets it.
Yep.
You see her face change and she gets quiet and she just looks at him and she's like, of course. And
very sweet.
So vital. Mm-hmm. At this point, I mean, this is not, you know, season four where we have this established caretaking.
Mm-hmm.
Pattern. This is still season two,
right?
You know, where only recently she was annoyed with this 5-year-old. But I, you know, that one just blows me away in that time.
I agree. It's a very vulnerable moment he's exposing to her, and you know, I think he realizes it right away when she says yes, and he realizes right then that, you know, it's taken care of. Now I gotta cover myself.
Yes, so and, exactly. Yeah,
he brings out the porn. Of course, she's completely rolling her eyes. And Espo walks by and goes, "I got it covered, bro."
Yeah.
I like the fact that that Castle's not on the receiving end of the Beckett glare, though.
Right.
That she glares at Espo.
Right.
And it just makes me laugh.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you guys, you're in a club. I get it.
Hello. Yeah. Even that, I don't think it doesn't take away from that she really took that seriously. And
oh,
that,
no.
You know, if there were anything to ever really happen, in some form, I'm sure she would do it.
Oh, yes. Even back then.
It's amazing. Yeah. One's just amazing.
What?
Nothing.
Castle?
If something were to happen to me, I want you to watch out for Alexis. She looks up to you. And if her boyfriends get frisky, you can shoot them.
Nothing's gonna happen to you.
But if it does.
Okay.
And would you also go into my closet and get rid of my porn collection before she finds it?
Don't worry, bro. I got you covered on that.
They find out that the CSU found prints for a Charles Taylor, which would be their CT from the calendar. And so they bring this dude in. They questioned him earlier when they went to the location that was indicated on the meeting, but he denied it right to Espo's face, which he hates. He gets very upset with that. Again, in the questioning room, he denies knowing Will and ever having met him. But when Kate says, "We have your fingerprints," he looks like, oh, I guess I've been caught. And this is when he caves and he says that he was the person that examined the mummy for this Thai client. And he says, well, it's complicated. It was a real mummy, but it was less than 500 years old. And they say, you know, well, how less? I don't know. Testing doesn't do that. So when he gave this information, Will insisted on seeing him. And that's when he made the appointment that was written on the calendar. And this is where Montgomery pulls them out of the room and tells them that someone found the mummy hidden away in the corner. So in the background, they bring the mummy to Lainey. This is where we see poor Nicole on the table. She says that the body's only 4 months old and that whoever killed her knew how to mummify things. And Castle puts two and two together and says his, you know, most said phrase, "I know who the blah is." And in this case, it's, "I know who the mummy is." He thinks it's Nicole. They do research. They find out that the dental records confirm that it is Nicole. And since they never found the body, the killer could use the real Nicole as the mummy and ditch the real mummy.
I hope we never see our Nicole on a table like that.
Agreed.
Mummified.
Let's not do that.
Let's not even think about that. That creeps me out a little.
I know.
Sorry.
It's okay. I agree with you 110%. So when they say that the killer knew how to mummify things, they bring in Rachel. She is the expert on mummification, and they confront her. They say, oh, well, you must have been jealous that Will was sleeping with Nicole. And this is where Stanford's story starts to fall apart, because Rachel says, well, Will wasn't sleeping with Nicole. Nicole liked Will, but Stanford wanted Nicole, and there was this whole jealousy thing. And they say, well, you know, the story doesn't hold up because you're the only one that could have done this mummification. And she says, no, Stanford taught me everything I know. And this is where all the pieces come together. They go to the museum. They find him and they try to arrest him. And lo and behold, he runs. Why does he run? I find this particular running scene quite amusing, since they actually come right out and tell us, you know, why do they run? I don't get it. Don't worry about it. Right.
Both of them are like,
Yeah, she's so casual about it, because she knows Ryan and Espo are around the corner and they've got probably the exits all covered.
Yeah.
Right, and I love how he falls down the stairs right at the foot of that banner. It's very smart writing. They look at the banner and they're like, do you think the curse doesn't exist still? You know, well, you know, there we go. He's at the foot of the stairs. And the first time I saw this, I thought perhaps he was dead until he moved a little bit. But then the cop comes around the corner and he looks pretty clueless, but I'm assuming that's the cop that arrested him.
This is the part where you say, and I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you meddling kids.
Is he actually running away?
Yeah, it's primal instinct, fight or flight.
Should we run after him?
No need.
And so they come back to the precinct and they fill Montgomery in on the details that Stanford lured Nicole into the burial chamber, and this is where he does all this creepy mummification because she spurned him. He found the nearest mummy and he stomped it into dust, which again is gross.
This guy's super creepy.
He is. He is. He's creepy and he's just pinchy-faced creepy. He took a pry bar from the museum and that's what he used to pry the gargoyle off the building, and he blamed it on the curse. So he loosely blamed it on the curse so people would look away from him.
When they're in the museum, there's the castle looking at the picture of the mummy of the king, and that whole little scene there with Rutrow.
Right. Yeah, that's...
I know it comes back to that whole Scooby-Doo
thing. The whole Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah.
And first with that big mummy picture, and yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's the part where he says as well, and I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling kids.
Right.
So he's kind of baiting the guy, which is funny.
Yeah. So. Even though the guy wasn't in on the previous joke.
Right.
I know, right. It was really just for Kate's benefit because right. I was not.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't have any idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, I like that. It's just a nice way to tie up the case.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, since Castle helped to solve the case, Kate's gonna help him out. And they go to lockup and they tell Chakate that they're gonna let him go and they're gonna give the artifacts to the Mayans. And of course, he's very suspicious of this. They tell him that, you know, the museum needs good press and that's why he's doing it. And if he cooperates by telling Castle how to reverse the curse, they'll do all this stuff. And he whispers it in his ear and we never see what happens, but apparently it's a little humiliating. Castle goes home and he walks in all whistly and skipping, and Alexis asks why, and this is where he says, you don't want to know, which leads us to believe that there's something a little humiliating about how he had to reverse the curse. And she's messing about with tomatoes again and says she's making a salad, just dicing them, which is a cute little reference again to the beginning of the episode. And I love how she says, you know, let's go to the museum tomorrow, knowing that he's been through all this. Rick says, let's go to the zoo instead. Which is cute.
She has her father's number there. Right.
And then he cuts his finger. I love this part. He says, so what's the difference between a curse and clumsiness?
Clumsiness.
Yeah. And she says, I'll go get a Band-Aid. He says, how about two? It's just an adorable little scene between him and his daughter.
And just their dynamic that is just so playful with each other, how they get each other is really nice to see.
But we
went a little faster than that. I like that scene with Chakotay because we see, you know, as much as they were messing with him about the curse and teasing him and stuff, when it came down to it at the end, you know, Beckett helped him. And even though she rolled her eyes, but she's like, okay, you know, I'll figure something out so we can ask him how to reverse this curse.
Well, ultimately, they want to make sure that he gets his closure with it. As much as they don't think that it's real, none of them, even Castle, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, it's sort of a closure thing. But, and I think, I like that. I think that's really sweet when she does these little things for her, where she's kind of indulges that side of him.
Yeah.
It's and just, you know, figures out how to help him.
I like it very much.
And I really, really want to know what he had to do to reverse that curse.
I know, me too.
And to what extent it involved her. Really,
I've read
always...
more than one fanfic on that topic.
I
think I only read one, or there's just one that stuck to my mind, but I always wanted to write something.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Would have been nice if there were some secret sexy times involved in that, but who knows?
Yeah.
It may just have involved him drinking from the wrong side of a glass or something. Who knows? Yeah, I like that. I like that they really go out of their way to... I mean, they're dismissing the charges against... This is serious. They're dismissing charges of death threats and allowing these relics to be returned to him in exchange for making Castle feel better. And I mean, that's saying a lot, so...
Very, very realistic development, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think she probably feels bad knowing that other stuff happened to him, but that they helped in the beginning to make him feel like he was cursed. You know, and then all these, the dog and the elevator and all that happened, and, you know. And that wasn't their making, but they feel bad about it. So, adorable. Cute episode, nice caskety moments, nice bonding, lots of team moments.
All around good one. Yep.
All around good one. Definitely.
Good family moments.
Oh, yeah. The family moments. Very cute. I love them. Serious and cute all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important development is him trusting Kate enough to take care of Alexis if something happens to him. So that was a big deal in this episode.
Yeah, I wish they'd have, just kind of odd side note relating to that, I kind of wish that they would have taken the opportunity at some point before Alexis is... I mean, she's kind of an adult now, so if anything happened to him, it's not like somebody would get temporary custody of her or anything like that. But I wish they would have taken the opportunity to let something happen to Castle and Kate to have to step in there.
Right.
You know, that would have been an interesting... twist of things, and maybe, you know, that it was in his whatever, his living will or something,
like she has to call Alexis from the hospital or something,
right? Well, or just that, I mean, you know, that he's incapacitated enough that somebody would have temporary custody of her,
right?
And that it would end up that they would find out that it was Kate, and that she would be kind of surprised even by this turn of events.
Right.
You know, that he actually had, that it wasn't just a, you know, kind of an off-the-cuff, in-the-moment, I'm cursed kind of comment, that he actually was serious, that he trusted her with Alexis.
Right.
That would have been an interesting thing to see.
It would have made it for a good storyline, although I don't necessarily think it's really needed, because I think the way that they showed them in that bubble of a moment, where you can see it shifting from the teasing to that serious moment, I think she knows.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I think she's aware. I just think it would have been an interesting... And I think it would have been interesting not just for Kate, but also for their family. And by family, I mean, all, you know, not just Martha and Alexis, but also their precinct.
Right. The 12th, family. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and how that would have affected everybody, and just kind of the depth of trust there would have been interesting.
It would have been nice to see Alexis, and no, I'm not saying nice in the way that I would have liked to see Castle hurt and Alexis
upset,
but it would have been a very interesting thing to see her rushing to find out what happened and having everyone there, and, you know, seeing Espo and Ryan and Kate kind of taking her in and comforting her like she's part of that family.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a very sweet moment as well. I agree. Yeah. Although I can see realistically why they wouldn't do it, because the show's named Castle. And having
I didn't suggest killing him off.
No. But having him even incapacitated, you know.
Well, it could be done that recently, so.
I know all about how that goes.
I prefer to see Castle for the whole hour, but that's just me.
You mean you don't want him in a coma for 13 months?
No. I do not.
Sorry.
Vigil.
Sorry.
It's okay. Sweetheart. At least he's not dead, like you made out.
Yeah. Well,
You're cruel, woman.
I yelled at plenty recently.
It's an amazing story, though. The fact that it stirs up feelings like that. I mean, I was literally bawling when I read that first story.
It made so many people cry.
That was just, yes.
I was so happy.
You know, I just thought, oh, well, what's she doing now? And you totally pulled the rug out from under me of my fluffy cloud that I was dreaming on when she's sitting there crying and listening to the message over and over. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
So are we ready to give it our ratings?
I think so.
Yes. Let's let Nicole go first.
Okay. Do I have to explain my choices?
You don't have to.
No. Well, yeah, like I said in the beginning, I really love the moment where he trusts her with his daughter. And I love that sweet, playful banter that they have. I love seeing Beckett laugh with him and just kind of they're being all cute together and sweet. So that's definitely a big draw for me. And the case itself was, you know, meh, you know.
Yeah.
It was fine. So I'm giving it an 8 on the visible Castle butt cheeks.
Nice. Scale. I like that.
That was a good one.
Yeah, it was. Okay, your turn, Joy.
Like I said, this is one of my all-time favorite episodes. Has a little bit of everything, a little bit of casketiness, lots of team bonding, some family times, lots of both verbal humor and physical humor. So I'm going to give it a 9 fedoras.
Very nice. And thank God neither of you took my thing. So I agree. I think this is a very... Again, it's a season 2 episode, so we're definitely building that relationship, and there were some very important moments for the team and for Castle and Beckett in particular. Also some beats with his mother and daughter that, you know, allowed us to see a little bit more into his family life. So I think it was a good combination of things. And like you said, Nicole, the case was, I think it was more a vehicle to get him into mm-hmm. that Indiana Jones curse thing. It's almost like they built the case around this premise that they wanted them to prank him. But it worked. It was, you know, it had all the normal hallmarks of a case with the red herring and so on. So I'm going to give it an 8.5 blueberries on forks.
Very nice.
So it's about, what, an 8-ish?
Mm-hmm. It's like yeah.
8.5-ish.
Yep.
Yeah. So, very good. Okay. I would say, you know, that's a stellar episode. I never give anything a 10, so. But you guys are great, as normal. I love talking to you again, Nicole.
It was very nice to be here again.
Thank you. Yay. And we have another one of these coming up. I think it's To Live and Die in LA, the next one that the three of us will do together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yay. So, everyone look forward to that. And Joy, as always, you're a joy. I know. I'm sure you've never heard that before.
I have a hashtag, so.
Yeah, I know. That's from Dave, right?
It is from Dave.
Yeah. But you're great on the podcast.
Thank you.
I love having you back.
Well, I'm glad to be here this time.
Yeah, even though you've really kind of made me cry quite a few times between the last time you were here and now.
Not going to apologize for that.
No, it's okay. I do think that you're getting back at me for giving you that fluff title, but hey.
It just makes me rebellious, as I've said multiple times.
I know. So I regret nothing because your stories are fantastic.
Well, I'm going back to fluff here soon, so.
Okay. I'm okay either way, though, because you're amazing, both of you. So you're such a great addition to the podcast, and I'm glad we could do this rewatch. Everyone, you know, stay tuned for the next one, To Live and Die in L.A. We're going to have even more fun and probably lots of giggling because of all the caskety goodness in that one.
And,
yeah, I know.
Sorry, I'm already melting here.
Exactly.
I love that episode.
We'll be back next time. Thank you guys for listening and see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.